You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 4th, 2019. And it's September. We're gearing up for games.
Oh, snap! Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Chester.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. We're getting on in the season. You know, games are coming out. We're playing some. We're not playing some. We're about to play some.
We're trying to play some.
We're trying to play some. It doesn't always work out.
We're waiting to play some.
Sometimes your child barfs on your console and you can't play.
You know what? I will defend my son. He has managed to ruin only one of my video games.
Which one is that?
This is mainly more of a sad commentary on the fate of the Wii U than anything else, but I keep all of the old DVD or Wii U DVD cases out on the shelf just for him to mess around with.
Sure.
And we came out to the living room one day to find him having snapped the Mario Kart 8 disc in half.
Whoa, just testing his own strength?
I don't know. Or maybe he's just really a Sonic Team Racing fan or something.
That would be fucking hilarious, dude.
Racing Evolve, or what is it? Racing Transform, Dad.
This is why you record, like, you got cameras all over the house, you know?
Of course, yeah. My surveillance state.
Well, you know, how else are you going to send in your tape to, you know, kids say the darndest things or whatever? Is that still near?
How else will I create my time machine and then send it back into the 1990s to submit it to Bob Saget's America's Funniest Home Videos?
Yeah, America's Funniest Home Videos. I bet you, look, Family Feud is still on. You know, I'm sure America's Funniest Home Videos is still on somehow.
It is, because I saw it the other day, and who was the host? I remember it. What was his name?
Howie Mandel.
No, the guy who's on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Alfonso Ribeiro.
Yes.
Ribeiro, is that how you pronounce his name?
Carlton,
yes. Yep. He was the host of it.
Okay, I mean...
So there you go.
Look, he's a working actor, all right? Yeah. Did they ever make an America's Funniest Home video game, do you think?
Oh, my God.
Because they made a Jeopardy game and a Family Feud video game.
They've made so many. Like, every once in a while, I mean, they continue to make... they made a Jeopardy video game for the Amazon Alexa.
Holy crow. Did they ever make a Price is Right video game?
I don't know, but have you seen the Price is Right documentary on Netflix?
No.
This is video game related, so I'm gonna talk about it. So this guy who was obsessed with the Price is Right, it was his favorite game. He went on The Price is Right multiple times. He was in the audience. And he was so obsessed with The Price is Right that he analyzed all of the various prizes that they would showcase.
Sure, like cars and boats and stuff.
Everything, down to like jewelry or furniture or whatever.
And this beautiful mahogany four-set kitchen ensemble.
Well, you joke, but he realized that they used the same ones over and over again because they just had promotional agreements with the same companies.
Sure.
And so he made a database for himself so he could memorize the prices.
And like flashcards and stuff.
And he made a little video game out of it. They showed it. He basically programmed it. You know, I saw him firing up. I believe he must have programmed the original one and ran it on DOS, because in the documentary he was firing up DOSBox to run to run his old video game. He did win, and he won a couple things on The Price is Right. The most scandalous thing was he helped someone else win, and then that person denied that he helped them.
Really?
Yeah, it's a great documentary.
Okay, everyone should watch it.
Yeah, somewhat video game related. Anyway. Video games. We're going to talk about some games that we have been playing or trying to play, and then there's a handful of games that, I mean, this is, you know, we're into the burr months, right? Here we are. So that means there's usually a flurry of releases at the end. So we're going to talk a little bit about the stuff that is locked and loaded for us.
Yep.
Where do you want to start? I feel like you will have more games than I will for various reasons. So maybe we start with you.
Okay, I will start with a game that I finished that, if you get a chance to play it, I guess we'll probably talk about it on the show. And that is Telling Lies.
Okay, I have played a little, a very little bit of this.
Yes. So Telling Lies is the next game from Sam Barlow et al., the fellow who made Her Story, which we reviewed here as a debrief on the podcast. You can dig up that old episode if you want to hear us talk about Her Story. But correct me if I'm wrong, both you and I really enjoyed Her Story. We thought it was very good.
Yep. It was just so different from anything else that most of the other games out there, even though it was, you know, this is an adventure game, this is somewhat a text adventure game, but it's just presented in such a unique way that it was a cool thing to play.
Yes, and this is similar to that one, a full FMV game, so all you're really doing is basically applying the same logic to the puzzle as you would in the first game. You can type in a word in a database, and it will bring up any videos that mention that word or phrase. Mm-hmm. And you can watch up to 5 videos from the total number of videos that are pulled from that database. And all of the videos have actual actors performing those dialogues. The difference, though, is in Her Story, it is one series of interrogations with the same actress playing the role. Mm-hmm. And it's all one-sided. There's never an opportunity to see what the interrogator is asking. So you sort of have to glean that from the questions that she is answering. And Telling Lies, there's 4 different characters, and sometimes others beyond just those 4 that will appear in the videos, but those are the main actors. And you are basically looking at footage from webcams that they are using. Mm-hmm. So one person might be talking to their wife while they're abroad, or talking to a girlfriend, or talking... A cam girl, for example, is another one, and that cam girl will appear in that VOD as well. And you can look at timestamps and use words that they're mentioning to find the other half of a conversation and sort of piece those 2 things together. So it adds quite a bit of sort of clever depth in storytelling that Her Story didn't have, because it was all one-sided, and really get, you know, a wider breadth of conversations and interactions. But we'll talk about this if you end up finishing it. It's just not nearly as strong as Her Story, and I actually think that the 4 characters that the game offers sets it back quite a bit.
In terms of being diluted, or are some of the actors not as good as others?
No, I mean, I think all the performances are pretty strong. I think the 2 major issues that I had is it doesn't have the same drive or urgency around a murder, right? Like, a murder is just very... much more interesting and drives you to pursue answers. Right. Whereas this one, there's a lot of content that has absolutely nothing or is not really relevant at all to the central mystery behind why you're watching these characters in the first place. And you do eventually come to a conclusion as to what makes them interesting for the viewer. But that downtime means that you end up watching a lot of videos over again, or you're watching videos from one side and then see the other side, and it's not really as interesting. There's a couple of moments where you're like, oh, that's a cool twist, I didn't see that, right? Like, maybe they'll use a nickname, and you think that they're talking to their daughter, but really it's somebody else, right? So there'll be moments like that that are clever, but it just feels like there's much more, I don't know, I don't mean to be offensive here in regards to the storytelling and writing, because I think it's very strong. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot, the theme of Telling Lies is pervasive and interesting, and you can learn a lot about those characters, but there's just a lot of chaff, and it kind of makes the game slow to a crawl at some points if you're not really pursuing it. And then in my case, you know, once I sort of figured out what that central conceit was of, like, why they were pursuing this and sort of what I was trying to do here, I basically got to a point where I felt pretty satisfied with the story that I had seen, even though I had predominantly only seen one of the person's main storylines, right? Like, there's 4 characters, and you could dive really deep into all of them. And in fact, at the end, if you see 60% or more of any individual character, you get the special epilogue. But I didn't do that because I just had very little interest retracing the story that I had already learned from this other person's perspective.
I was thinking about because when I started playing it, I was just clicking around and experimenting with the system, and it seems like it is it's an addition to the original system that they're using, which is kind of a limited database. It gives you a certain number of responses.
Yep.
Did they do anything around branching the story at all, or is it still one story? It just is up to you to uncover whatever pieces you want to see out of it.
It's still just one story. I mean, there's no interaction or changing of the story at all. Okay. I think, honestly, that's probably Sam Barlow's next challenge. I think that you can get something really interesting there. And maybe he was experimenting with telling a story across four different individuals, frames of view here, which I think was super interesting. And again, like, I think it is a super interesting game. If you're into her story at all, I would strongly recommend you pick up Telling Lies and check it out. I just don't think it hits the mark as strongly as her story does.
I was interested that it seemed like the player protagonist character was much more, and I mean this almost literally, was much more physically present, where you could see her reflection in the screen the whole time.
And yep.
Things sometimes get blurry if you're tired or whatever.
Sometimes her like butt naked boyfriend walks back through.
Oh, really?
And you're like, nice, get some.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, those little details I appreciate quite a bit. And when you go into the operating system of the fake OS that you're in, there's a little PDF readme of basically justifying the constraints of the game, where you are using this CIA surveillance tool, and the limited search results and the query language is purposefully strict so that it's not over broad and you're not dragnetting people. And I was like, that's like, I admire games and just movies and TV in general that go out of their way to justify their conceits, even if they're totally not believable, where it's like, okay, you at least believe that you at least went to the work of justifying this conceit, whether or not I still like it or not.
Totally. And I think that's super cool. It's very sharp. There's also like another mechanical difference in her story. When you found a word to a video, you would bring up that entire video clip where that word appears. In this case, you bring up a video clip that starts approximately when the word that you searched for is there. So there may be, say, a video that's like 15 minutes long, but if you say searched for the word unicorn and that appears in the middle of the video, you only get to see the second half of that video. So if you want to dig deeper to find an earlier portion, you have to use different words. And sometimes it's very satisfying because you'll realize, oh, the context that I thought existed in this video is wrong now that I have the context from the first half of that video. That's super cool. 99% of the times, though, you're finding a video you already watched and are only catching a few, maybe a minute or so before it started, and your context was pretty spot on.
Right. Yeah, I think I'll definitely at least go a little bit further to see a few of the characters and just what they do with it, but I think it's... this is clearly a refinement of something that has been done and a very cool version of it.
Yep.
So if you haven't played the first one, then this one would be a really neat thing to do, except if you care more about the murder mystery versus the format.
Yeah. The one thing that kind of bums me out is whenever you are having this much footage, it means it's going to be a long time until Sam Barlow makes another game.
That's true. Especially if like your theory of doing more narrative branching is correct.
Yeah.
You just have to do so many different things.
Yeah. There's a lot of work putting put into this. And God, so many performances that no one will watch, or a small fraction of people will watch.
Right. Right. You'll see a small percentage of all of the script that was written.
I'm sure someone on YouTube's already patched them all together into one cohesive story.
Cool. All right. Let me talk to you about something that I was playing recently. I've been playing this I started playing this a little while ago. I was playing Cadence of Hyrule, which is the Crypt of the Necrodancer game, but it's set in Hyrule.
Man, I slept on this game because when it was announced, I was so hyped, and then I forgot about it, and it came out, and I had not played it, and other things were on my plate, and I just have not touched it. But I hear really good things about this.
I really want to like this game, but I don't.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Did you play Crypt of the Necrodancer?
No, I never did. I always meant to, because it seemed like a very cool... roguelike plus rhythm game. Yep. I mean, it seemed like a very cool phenomenon, and people loved it. I just never got around to it. And then when they put out this little... I don't even know what to call it. I mean, it's its own separate game, obviously, but it's almost like a mod... because it has Zelda items and the map, it kind of resembles the Legend of Zelda 1 map. But I don't know. Something about it is just not clicking with me. And I think it's mainly the music, sadly enough, where I don't feel... Maybe this is just more of a commentary on myself, but...
This music sucks!
I just can't get... I don't know. I'm just not into it. I'm not into the beat. It feels... So, first off, it's very strict.
Maybe you've
lost
the beat, Scott.
I mean, maybe I've lost what little rhythm I started with, but I mean, the it actually is very demanding in terms of... you have to move on the beat. So if you just have a dun, 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 you can only press the button on the beats or else Link will kind of stumble and not move to the next square, which is cool in theory, but I feel like the music doesn't support that level of precision because it's actually kind of hard to find the correct beat while a bunch of other shit is happening on the screen.
So
I just haven't clicked in with it yet.
Well, let me throw this out to you. Did you know you can disable that and you can make it entirely turn-based?
So I was thinking about doing that, but then at that point it's like, well, what am I even doing? Because I mean, the whole point of this is somewhat, you know, it is kind of like a rhythm game. I guess I could turn it into a tile-based
puzzle game.
Yeah, puzzle game if I wanted to, which maybe it would be better.
It is already that, right? Like what is the rhythm element other than adding a layer of difficulty to it, right? Like you'd be playing a different game, but you're still functionally playing a slider puzzle game, you know? The rhythm is really just set there to add that challenge, right? I mean, I guess you'd be making it a little bit easier on yourself, but I think you'd still be getting a different kind of enjoyment out of it.
I think the other thing that the rhythm does is, I think when you change it to just turn-based, it locks everything to turn-based where, you know, the enemies will only move when you move, and it becomes much more like almost like a turn-based RPG game, whereas if you have it on the rhythm mode, it still is an action game. Like you could still theoretically outmaneuver your enemy rather than just have to kind of
puzzle it out,
chessboard outmaneuver them,
right?
You know, there's still a dexterity challenge, which I like the sound of, but I don't know, maybe I just can't do it. So I don't know, I'm gonna try to give it another chance. But it was disappointing. I expected to just really lock into this game, but I didn't.
Does it feel like a Zelda game?
There are certain things that feel very Zelda-like, where in the same way that the 16-bit Zelda games felt, where you know you have to get certain items to open up the crypts that you're going into, or you get the hookshot, and the map is actually laid out similarly to a Zelda map, feels like it would be laid out. So the trappings of it are very cool. It's just I haven't been able to sync up with it for whatever reason.
That's a bummer.
I'm gonna try to give it another shot, but I'm in kind of a game slump.
I hear you. I'll talk a little bit about another game, Pathologic 2, I've been playing. And this is a game by a studio that came out with Pathologic 1 many, many years ago. And we've talked about it on the podcast before also. It's kind of notorious, right? Like there's a great, I think it's a Eurogamer, maybe a PC Gamer multi-part article about it. But it is a game that is unabashedly difficult and unforgiving and grotesque and bizarre. And Pathologic 2 is really just a remake of that first game. And it's something I actually backed on Kickstarter a super long time ago. And it came out early this year and I was finally like giving it a chance. It's very difficult to describe because it's not a normal linear story. Like it basically starts out at the end of the game and then jumps forward to the beginning of the game as though you have to try to figure out how to not have it be such a shitty ending, essentially.
Oh, okay.
But
okay, you have a chance to try to rewrite it.
Yeah, so like here's a good example. And it's like you were a doctor in a plague town and everyone hates you at first. And if you go into an area where you're hated, sometimes people will chase you and just beat you up. You have almost no ways of defending yourself. You can buy a gun, and that gun costs, I think, 2,000 gold, and I'm scrounging for, you know, 100 gold here and there. You have to feed yourself. There's a health system. There's a stamina system. There's a sleep system, there's a thirst system, there's an infection system, and all of those you have to track, and all of them get harder and harder to satisfy as the day goes on and the town becomes more plague-ridden. And it is hard. It's super hard. And in fact, they added a difficulty slider into the game, but before you can change the difficulty slider, there's a warning and a button that you have to press, and the warning essentially says, this game is designed so that it is almost unbearable. Like, you should you should die. You know, you should have to restart the game and play again with the knowledge that you have now. Like, it's you. We want to push you in such a way that you are forced to do bad things to these, like, townspeople and, like, be cutthroat to survive, because that's kind of the message that they're playing with. Mm. And it's super weird and super fun, and I like it quite a bit.
What was the format of the original game? Like, is this still a first-person exploration style game, or did they depart from it?
Nope. The first one was a first-person game as well. Yeah. There's a few differences between the first one and the second one, and I did play some of the first one, but it was notoriously buggy as well, and so Pathologic 2 was really an attempt to make it a bit more approachable and a bit more playable. They've also added, like, these weird mannequin figures that will show up in town and remind you of mechanics. If you're thirsty, they might show up and give you water and remind you that you have to drink and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And also in the first game, so it's over a period of 12 days. And after the first 12 days, or if your character dies, you get to play a different character with different relationships and different needs. And those two scenarios, the two additional ones after the first, do not exist in Pathologic 2 yet. I think they're expected to be a DLC at some point. And they are kind of crucial to that Pathologic experience, because in the first Pathologic, and it's true in this one as well, there's a actual real-world clock, and events will happen at certain times whether or not you're there for them. People That's might cool. die, people might get sick, you might be able to get sweet loot or miss out on loot or so on and so forth, right? There are fundamental characters that are crucial to the story and you know intimately that might die from the infection if you're not there to cure them. But curing them means you don't have resources to cure yourself or to cure someone else. So it's always sort of dragging on and becoming worse and worse and worse. If you are a glutton for punishment, it's a very interesting game. But you also have to be prepared to be, I don't know, like, embrace the really bizarre Eastern European.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like, it's almost like, Stalker. Esque,
yeah.
Like,
I was just gonna
film
say,
Stalker.
This could be like set in the same universe as Stalker or something.
Yeah, or like Solaris. Like, it's very surreal. Mm. People are mentioning the weirdest shit. There's like half naked people walking around town with like skulls on their heads and stuff. It does not make sense. Nothing is real. It's all bizarre. People will transform in front of your eyes. It's fucking bonkers. But that sounds like it's up your alley if you want to go through a horrible, horrendous experience. Pathologic 2.
I was thinking about, there's a few other games that do this. What's the Jordan Mechner one? The one on the Last Express, I think?
The Last Express, yeah.
Majora's Mask, yep, or there's a few other games that have that real-time clock.
But really only a few, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That makes me very interested in the game. So when you die, are there roguelike elements or persistent elements that happen, or do you just start from the beginning again?
I have not died yet, knock on wood. Uh-huh. My understanding is when you die, you are dead. And you can accept that as the
beginning.
And that could be the end of your game. Like, that could be its own cohesive story. Like, you were a doctor, you came to this town, you lasted a few days, and then you died. So one thing I do know, though, is they will always allow you to load old saves. The only thing that doesn't refresh when you load a save is how many people you've killed in the town. It remembers that. So that it can bring it back. So you can always load an older save, but oftentimes the reason you died is not because you did something, you made a mistake. Like, that does happen, right? But you may sow the seeds of your own destruction in day 10, in day 1, right? Like, if you needed a gun and you didn't buy the gun, or if you didn't get enough medical supplies and hoard those away, then that's that. You know what I mean? And so you're going to have to load saves way older and older. And to be honest, I may not ever finish this game, like, as it's truly meant to be, because I'm only on day 5, I want to say, and it is very, very difficult, and I have 7 more days to go, so may not work out.
That's cool. I didn't know about the time mechanic, which is a cool twist.
Yeah, always kind of a cool treat.
So let me talk to you about a game that I tried to play.
Yes.
Remnant from the Ashes.
Yes. I've been meaning to play this game as well. I have it on Steam, ready to go.
Well, so I... It's a real bummer. It's kind of a weird throwback to PC gaming of yesteryear, because I've only been able to play this game for about 10 minutes until it hard crashes to the desktop.
And what I get 10 minutes though, huh, Scott?
I mean, woo! I get an Unreal Engine 4 error message with a bunch of logs that I can send them. Ooh. And it's rough stuff. I don't know exactly what's happening. I tried to edit a few of the files and still it's messing up. I'm not quite sure. I disabled a bunch of different third-party overlays, like the GeForce overlay, all that shit.
God, yeah.
And I still have not been able to get it running correctly. And I spent the better part of an hour or two just trying to, like, one, get through the tutorial section, because it is a Souls-esque game where the very beginning is kind of, you know, your introduction to the game and the area where you're supposed to die, and then the real game starts.
Man, it sounds as punishing as Pathologic.
It's a similar thing as any of those games, but it just keeps crashing on me. Yeah. And I really would like to play it. I just don't know if I'm going to keep the momentum now, because I can see no way through getting it to run correctly.
I mean, sometimes you just got to throw in the towel, you know?
Maybe. It seems cool because it is specifically designed for co-op.
Yep.
In a way that seems a bit more straightforward than the Souls games co-op by design.
Yep.
And it's set in this kind of, I don't know, it reminds me a little bit like of Dishonored, this alternate reality 19th century, early 20th century universe where there's both swords and guns.
Yeah.
And it seems like a cool version of
Are
a
there
Souls
gun
game.
Swords?
I don't know. I wouldn't put it past them, though, because this game seems very much like that. I just have not... I don't know. I hope that you can try it and tell me if you can get past the initial part, because, like I said, the game just keeps hard crashing on me.
My barber gave me his phone number specifically so I could play Remnant with him. So I feel like I'm obligated to do that, which is also a little weird.
If I mean, want like, a good haircut in the future, I need to play
I like
this
my
game.
Barber, but does that like violate like a... I don't know. Is there like an unspoken agreement that's like...
Is there barber-patient confidentiality that I should be respecting?
You know, sometimes like, there's like a bar... tangent time again. But there's like a bar that our coworkers go to after work quite a few days. And we're really chummy with the staff. But like in the back of my mind, I'm always like, there's this invisible divide, man. You know, it's like your staff. I'm paying to be here. I don't know.
That's true. Once the money dries up, who knows if they'll be standing
by. That's what I'm saying. Like, are we still going to be buds if I'm like, I'm going to take my business elsewhere? I don't know.
Yeah, what if you start cutting your own hair? Will they still join your games?
I mean, almost certainly not. I want to talk a little bit about Control, but I think we'll probably save that for another day because this podcast is going a little bit long. But I've been running into a lot of bug issues on that game as well. Like, my map goes away. There's quite a bit of stuttering. There's a bunch of frame rate drops. Everything I've read about it, I'm playing on the PlayStation 4, Pro, and everything I've read about
you're
it,
a pro.
Because I'm a pro and a game with the best, say that it's best on PC. But it's weird to be in a place where I'm reminded that sometimes that's just the way it goes. You know, like sometimes things are buggy or don't work right.
Yep.
And I almost feel like I've been taking it for granted. I wonder if it's partially because how much I've been playing on the Switch. Like, I don't really run into bugs or game-breaking issues in games anymore. Like, it's not something that I feel like I've encountered very often, you know? Even basic-ass stuff that I used to deal with all the time, like screen tearing and things like that. Like, I just don't really encounter, and it's very... It's weird because there's a part of me, right, that when I'm thinking about Control, and, you know, we'll probably talk about it on the podcast eventually, if you give it a chance, because I know you said you wanted to play it as well.
Yeah, I'd like to play it.
But I have to wonder in the back of my mind, is this something that I am negatively thinking about? Like, am I docking at points because of these issues? Like, would I like this game more if it didn't have all of these issues, you know? Like, I run into it with load times, right? Like, how do you let that weigh on your judgment of a game when if a load time is really rough, you know?
Yeah.
Or there's, like, minor input things. Because it's hard. Like, I think that it would be really interesting to have a conversation about Control, but to be perfectly honest, I don't know if I would recommend it to really anyone at this point, because I think it's just okay, and maybe if it didn't have all of these issues, it would be better than okay, but man, there's just a lot of like little tiresome, irksome things there.
Well, and I will say Remedy games seem to, I mean, not to like insult them, but it seems like the most interesting part of Remedy games is the world building and the fiction that they're creating.
Yeah.
And the game is fine. But if the game is less than fine, then you can't immerse yourself in the weird FMV that they're doing, or the homages to Twin Peaks or whatever else is happening.
Yeah.
And so it just becomes, you lose both things because you're being pulled out because of technical reasons.
Yeah. There are times when I'm just like, maybe you should just tone it down a bit, you know, like don't, I think
we don't need all these particles.
Well, I think this is true of Quantum Break as well. Right. Like I think that Remedy is attractive to a lot of people because they try to shoot the moon, you know, like they try to make a game that has a really interesting world, has high caliber actors, like they are going for that AAA, a lot of polish, looks gorgeous. Hey, on PC, ray tracing looks dope as hell, a lot of particles going on. But when you're doing that, like inevitably some things fall through the gaps, and they have to. And I think that if you're okay with that, then this type of game is going to absolutely shine, right? But if you let it get to you, it can really kind of pull you out of it. And that's just kind of a bummer.
Yeah. I'm hoping that, you know, because I probably won't get to it for at least another week or two. And so I'm hoping that there are just some basic optimization things versus some more latent issues that are harder to resolve. But I think your point about the PC stuff is spot on, though, because that's why it was so surprising when I had all those hard crashes with Remnant, where I just hadn't encountered that for a really long time, and I hadn't had to, you know, look up on forums various potential fixes for my PC games for a really long time. And I think if anything, that's more of a testament to how good and standardized development has gotten on the PC across all platforms for whatever reason. I'm sure there's many different reasons, but it does stick out now.
Yeah.
And maybe that's also just where we're at. Like we're at kind of a technological shift with, you know, the RTX cards and the impending new systems coming out.
Yeah.
And so things are just going to start breaking more, but I think we did have a really good run there where, even today, I think even mid-level hardware can run pretty much any game you'd want to play on it, which is cool. We're just living in a good time for that.
I mean, maybe I'm also just feeling the strain of the current console, right? Like, for a long time we were talking about, oh, the PS4, like it'll last super, you know, 10 years or whatever before we phase it out. But I don't know. I mean, if it was struggling and isn't able to benefit off of some of the graphical decisions that the team made, then maybe I just need to play it on a better system, you know?
Yeah, we're definitely getting there. It's just it has taken longer than it has in the past, and I think we've just, it's a good problem to get used to. I mean, it's great. It's great not to have to monkey around with INI files anymore. Like that's amazing. I never want to go back.
Yep,
but it's also just kind of a reminder that things get a little weird when you have these technological transition points.
Things are getting weird.
Okay, what's a game that you're looking forward to playing in the next couple months now that we're kind of back into fall release season?
I'm still trying to convince myself not to play World of Warcraft.
Okay.
I don't know if I'll succeed or not, because there's just so much charm in the old school vanilla WoW. Because, I mean, even if I only played for like 4 hours, I'd be like, worth it, you know?
Right.
Although it throws me off that it's like $40 still. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus the subscription, right? Yep. You have to play. Yep. You have to pay for that.
And then you had mentioned before the show the Link's Awakening remake.
Yeah, which is coming out soon. Like, that's like a 2 week away thing.
Right. And I never played Link's Awakening, and a lot of people, that is their favorite game of all time.
Yeah. It seems like it's one of those, I mean, I guess all Zelda games are kind of weird now that I think about it, but there's chain chomps in this game.
Yep.
There's weird Nintendo references to other Nintendo series, but this game was originally made in the early 90s or late 80s or something. So it's just, I'm really into it because I've never finished it myself. So I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I'm hyped.
And then, of course, both of us, our long odyssey will come to an end this November.
Yeah, Ancestors. Oh, are you talking about Death Stranding, or are you talking about Ancestors?
Oh, hell yeah.
I thought you were talking about Ancestors, the Humankind Odyssey.
No, that's our ongoing odyssey. That will never end until we blow ourselves up.
Okay, yeah. Death Stranding. Oh, man.
You know we're going to have to play that game. Don't try to tell me that we're not going to play that.
We're going to play it. Yeah, we'll play it. Oh, yeah. That's fine.
Okay.
You know what? I'm going to make a call. I don't think I'm going to like it. I think it's going to be bad.
I would not bet against that.
I've been watching, I don't know if I've mentioned on the show, Scott and I talk about it all the time, I've been watching Star Trek The Next Generation season one, ladies and gentlemen, on Netflix. I imagine it's going to be kind of like that, you know? Like, so weird and over the top and silly that it's like, so bad it's good.
I have a sneaking suspicion that, in comparison, Star Trek The Next Generation Season 1 will look like the most tightly crafted, well-written epitome of dramatic structure.
That's true. There's no woman named Mama on the Star Trek crew yet.
Wait. Yeah. We're coming up into a very busy season, so we're ramping up, which is good because, like I said, I'm in a bit of a funk with all of the rest of the games that I'm playing right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming out.
Cool. All right, well, we will leave it there for now. Experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. Come on down, bring your friends, leave us a review, iTunes, Stitcher. You can find us wherever fine podcasts are sold for free.
Cool. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.